You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera with Americans for Truth. We're a single-issue organization devoted to opposing and exposing the powerful homosexual activist movement. I'm here with my good friend, John Kirkwood, who's pastor at Grace Gospel Fellowship in Bensonville, Illinois.
It's good to be back, brother.
Yes, John is a very unique pastor. He's a culture warrior, and he's also a great pastor who is a wonderful teacher of the Word of God. And we're excited today. We've got another broadcast that's going to deal with this incredible homosexual marriage, so-called lawsuit in Chicago. And we're privileged to have as a guest Rena Lindewaldson, who is a professor at the Liberty University School of Law. We've had her on before at AFTA. She's also associate dean at the university, at the law school. Rena, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Well, I've gotten to know Rena bit by bit as we labor together in the culture wars, and I can just say that she's very unique. She applies the Bible, the Word of God, that kind of ethic to the study of law. And it's just refreshing to hear her speak on this topic. And we're hoping, Rena, that you can enlighten us on this case we have in Illinois. As we discussed last week, John and I, this is a very unique case in Illinois. Our Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, and various other senior Democratic officials in Illinois have essentially, and the clerk of Cook County, David Orr, have essentially pulled a mini Obama, only worse, in this state by refusing to defend our existing law that defines marriage as between one man and one woman in Illinois. And not only are they not defending it, they've joined a homosexual activist / ACLU lawsuit to undermine and destroy the law and overturn the law. And Rena, as we discussed last week, and I wanted to get your comments on and your insights, what hasn't been reported in Illinois media and even really discussed by pretty much any observers here is that the judge presiding over this case, Sophia Hall, is an open lesbian who's a member of a homosexual judges group. Have you ever seen anything like this, Rena?
I haven't, and as you brought this to my attention, I compare it to, or initially compared it to, what took place in California, where there were speculations as the Prop 8 case was moving forward as to the judge being homosexual. But, it really didn't come out until after the case was over and he issued his decision. Here you've got a judge that is actively involved in a variety of organizations and is actually being honored at various times for being openly gay, and she's presiding over the case in Illinois as to whether the marriage laws are unconstitutional. So from my perspective, it's entirely unprecedented.
Do you believe, and we'll get into her backgrounds, her associations, and her actual even advocacy, do you believe, knowing what you know now, that Judge Sophia Hall should recuse herself from this case?
I do, and I know we can get into the specifics, but she is a member of an organization who has as one of its very few goals it lists as to pursue any and all acts reasonably necessary to further LGBT equality in the state of Illinois. And so she's already pledged to do everything she can possibly do to uphold what she sees as equality for LGBT individuals. And so now she's presiding over a case that has the opportunity to declare the marriage laws unconstitutional, which in her view, obviously, would probably mean supporting equality.
Right. It's just amazing, John. I mean, Cook County is corrupt, but it's hard to appreciate how corrupt it is if you're outside of Illinois. And this is a county that, and we have a photo here of Judge Hall. She's one of 14 openly homosexual judges in this county.
Yeah. It's affectionately called Crook County now. And I can actually make the bold statement, and it might sound absurd as a pastor, but we were better off when the mafia ran Illinois, because they were interested in making a profit, not making some kind of political statement that is totally abhorrent. I'll tell you what the left would say to both you and Rena, and I want to hear your answer to it. And this would be the challenge to your questioning the capacity of this judge. They'd say, well, would you ask a African-American judge to recuse him or herself from a civil rights case? Or would you ask a woman to recuse herself from a suffrage case? So what would you say to that, Rena?
Sure, and I thought about that because I want to be consistent and think about this from a principled approach. And the way I look at that is we already have laws on the books that state you cannot discriminate based on race, cannot discriminate based on being male or female. And so what that judge is doing is actually upholding existing law and applying it to a situation where essentially saying you are discriminating based on race. Here, this is a request to change the law, for unprecedented in the state of Illinois to now find that marriage, which has historically been one man and one woman, we now want a new definition for marriage. And so you're not upholding existing law. You're being asked to make new law where there are not protections currently based on your sexual orientation. So I do see that as different. You're being asked to, for a law that's going to impact you, change it in the judge's favor, in essence.
Right. And there are many differences, of course, Rena. Race is not a moral issue. It's not a behavioral issue. Racial discrimination was abhorrent. It's a stain on America's past. But homosexual behavior is a moral question. And so when you are a judge, now let's get into the specifics here. The group that she's a member of, as you said, it's called the Alliance of Illinois Judges. And one of the goals, you mentioned their goals, they talked about, for example, they are trying to, they're fighting for pension rights, pension equity rights for spouses of LGBT judges. That is essentially homosexual activism, is it not, Rena?
Absolutely. It doesn't exist now, and you're asking to change existing law to, as the other goals here say, promote and foster what they consider respect and unbiased treatment. So, you're looking to change existing rules concerning who's entitled to pension benefits, who's entitled to marriage, who's to be entitled to be treated as married, and all of the rights and benefits that come from that, because there's a reason for promoting heterosexual marriage. And so to preside over that, and if she ultimately rules in favor of the plaintiff, would be a change in the law, but consistent with the missions of the group that she's a member of.
Right. And let's talk more about this Judge Sophia Hall. That group, the Alliance of Illinois Judges, marches annually in the Chicago so-called Gay Pride Parade. I was there observing just a few weeks ago, and, there it was with all the floats were about so-called marriage equality, which is gay speak for legalizing so-called homosexual marriage. So they're marching in the Gay Pride Parade. Of course, Rena, all the elected officials that we've been talking about, including Lisa Madigan, I believe, and other senior officials, including David Orr, the county clerk, were marching in that parade. But so was the judges group. Now, here's in the words of Sophia Hall, she accepting an award in, I believe, 2010. Judge Sophia Hall said this, quote, "I have, with others, focused on efforts to combat the injustice of racism, gender bias, bias against gays and lesbians, and other stereotypes that belittle those who are stereotyped. At the core of stereotyping and the bias that rears from it is the lack of real knowledge about the other who is different from us." And then it goes on. Unquote. So essentially, she has that is homosexual advocacy. And of course, we're going to hear from the media that, oh, she's just for equality. She's just for fair treatment of gays and lesbians. But the whole language of this agenda always tries to make it seem as if it's an innocuous civil rights agenda. But obviously, she is a pro-homosexual advocate. But we know that liberals don't usually recuse themselves in such cases, do they?
Well, we've seen that in California. That didn't happen. We've seen it in other cases. And I think what's important here is, you know, your this touches on the legal case that's going to take place just briefly, and we can talk about it maybe a little bit later. But, you know, if she's maintaining that those who are homosexual identified or involved in homosexuality are being discriminated against, don't get sufficient respect, have this history of not being understood, that is relevant to the legal case that's going to take place, because plaintiffs are going to argue that they've historically been discriminated against, that they can't get a fair, you know, fair share in the political process, and they have to resort to the courts. So she's already advocating for things that are part of the legal case that plaintiffs have to make, and she's already stated how she's essentially going to rule with respect to that because of the statement that you just quoted.
Right. And I guess, do you believe that most of your fellow legal experts would concur? I mean, is there controversy? I know there is controversy because, and we'll talk about it, the governor of Virginia said that there should be no discrimination based on sexual orientation with regard to judges. And that was a case of a homosexual activist who was trying to become a judge, who had been, and I think he was appointed to be a judge, and conservative groups fought it, and he did not make it. I can't recall his name right now. But the governor of Virginia said, hey, that's wrong. There should be no discrimination with regard to judges. But, Rena, this is a hard one because the gay side, and I'm using that word, which is not really a good word to use, the homosexual side is saying this is all about identity. But we're saying it's about behavior. So it's hard to – we can't even agree on the language.
And it is. It's one thing to, and I, you know, can understand perhaps where the governor is coming from under those circumstances, that we're not going to disqualify someone automatically under our current system of law because they're involved in homosexuality. You know, I could decide to vote for them or not, but that's different than what's taking place in this case.
Yeah, because she sort of has a record. Of course, this guy also had been a gay activist fighting for homosexuality in the military. But we're talking about Judge Sophia Hall, who is deciding the case. Two homosexual lawsuits to try to win so-called gay marriage. We'll be right back after the break with Rena Lindewaldson. Welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to Professor Rena Lindewaldson of the Liberty University School of Law. She is a wonderful culture warrior. And she's a friend of Americans for Truth. She's done some tremendous work. I encourage you. And she's also she's an author. And Rena, you have written a book. Give us a brief discussion of your book before we get back to the gay marriage stuff. It's called Only One Mommy. Tell us about the book really quickly.
Sure. Just briefly, it chronicles the life story of a woman, Lisa Miller, who eventually got involved in a homosexual relationship, had a child, and then ended up having a 7-year battle for her child against her former same-sex partner, dealing with Vermont versus Virginia, states with strong marriage laws, not strong marriage laws. So it's not only the personal side of her struggle with homosexuality, but it's the legal side of what's taking place in this country. And ultimately, for those who follow the case, you know, Lisa Miller has been gone from this country for more than 2 years now. No one really knows where she's at. But it chronicles that story that's taking place repeatedly across the country that people really need to know about.
And it's called Only One Mommy. How do people get the book?
You can get it at libertycouncil.org. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Okay,
really
and,
easy. Mm-hmm.
And just plug in Only One Mommy. And again, this illustrates, John, this is a classic illustration of the difference between homosexuality and those other categories. Here we have a woman, Lisa Miller, who was in a homosexual relationship. She was a lesbian with a partner, and they had a child that they were caring for. It was her child. And she got saved. She became a believer, and she left that lifestyle. You can't leave. There's no African-American lifestyle. There's no Hispanic lifestyle. That's an ethnicity. Which you have, it's innate, and yet homosexuality. If we were to grant the idea that this is a minority group, it's really the only kind of, if it's a so-called, you know, like a genuine minority, it's the only minority you can just leave. You know, it's totally different from these other minorities.
Yeah, well, she's got to be punished if she became a Christian.
Oh yeah. Oh well, she is being punished, and she was being punished by the attempt to deny her to raise her own biological child. So, Rena, congratulations for your work on that. Now, let's get back to the case here in Chicago, and let's give some background on the case. Essentially, what happened is Illinois has a marriage law on the books. They passed a law in the wake of the whole growing controversy over gay marriage, and I can't remember the year. They passed a marriage law in Illinois that defines a marriage between one man and one woman. We tried. I was among the people trying to pass a marriage amendment in Illinois, which is very difficult. And interestingly, Rena, when we fought for the marriage amendment, and it's a very difficult process, you have to get it passed through the legislature and then a 3/5 vote. And we just fell short. We tried to do a pass it in the legislature. Then we tried to pass an advisory referendum, and we always fell short. But when we were doing that, the homosexual lobby said, well, you don't need the marriage amendment. We've got a marriage law. Well, now, the very marriage law that they said did, you know, precluded the necessity for a marriage amendment, they're now trying to destroy. So it's whatever it takes to win, right, John?
Yeah.
Incremental path. So now they're trying to destroy the very marriage law that they said was, you know, oh, we don't need a marriage amendment. They've and some more background, too, about Chicago, guys, for anybody who knows. I've been back in Chicago since 2003. I was living in D.C. before. I was raised in Michigan. I don't think until the last few years.
That was just what you just said was just so frightening. Yeah, that's the only experience of America you've known has been Detroit, D.C., and Chicago.
Detroit was suburbs, and it was Michigan's beautiful, but you're right, D.C.
Peter LaBarbera needs your prayers, folks.
But what I didn't appreciate really, John, until very recently was how much of a stronghold Illinois, Chicago is for the homosexual movement.
Yeah. If San Francisco's Sodom, we're definitely Gomorrah.
Yeah. Well, we're right up there, I'd say, in the top five in the world. And I think it just angers these homosexual activists that we don't have so-called gay marriage in Illinois. Mm-hmm. They're mad that, you know, Iowa next door, you know, the cornfields, they've got gay marriage, you know, they've got it other places, but not here. I mean, this is a city that is so decadent that it has its own sadomasochism museum. Mm. Hey, you know, wow, what a tourist attraction. So, Rena, we have the law now, and 25 so-called gay couples in two lawsuits, one with the ACLU, one with Lambda Legal, have sued because they say that the civil unions law that was passed, that was sort of rammed through here in Illinois, they say, well, that discriminates because that's separate but equal. We're getting all the benefits of marriage, but we're not calling it marriage. So now they're suing, and our government, the government in Illinois, which means the attorney general, the clerk of Cook County, other prosecutors such as his counsel, Anita Alvarez, they've all colluded. And they're siding with the gay activists rather than defending the law. Now, first question, Rena, is isn't that illegal? You can't. How can a? I guess Obama's they got the idea from Obama. The what is the AG? Isn't the AG tasked with defending the law?
It is. It's very similar to what took place with the DOMA and President Obama. And suddenly, you know, he's not, as the executive branch, going to defend the law. A similar thing took place in California, and I was there at one point when the judge, you know, looked at the state and said, you know, you do have a duty to defend this law. And at that time, the state was taking sort of a no position, no comment on the lawsuit, even though it was a defendant and was charged to defend the laws. And the judge reminded them, you know, you're supposed to defend the law. Now, ultimately, the state there chimed in and said, we're not going to. But, you know, he recognized it. And that's what we pay them for. It's what they're paid for, to defend the laws on the books that are validly passed by the legislature.
Okay, so now they've all taken the side of the homosexual lobby. Obviously,
So let me get this straight, because I'm a layman. The law thing's way over my head. You're telling me that the defendant in the case, the prosecutor in the case, and the lesbian judge have... I mean, where does justice come in here? I mean, pretty much this case is over, right?
It appears that way. We do have a group that's intervened, and we can get to that. But, I mean, you're looking at it the right way. You've got, you know, 25 couples who challenge the marriage laws, and the two people that they name as the defendants who are supposed to come up and defend the laws have said, you know what, we think they're unconstitutional as well. So in the answers, when they respond to the complaint, admit that, yeah, the laws are unconstitutional. So at that point, it's, you know, essentially the case has been thrown.
Isn't this the proverbial when Franklin was dismissing democracy? He said democracy is two wolves voting against one lamb for what to have to lunch. I mean, haven't the wolves voted?
And then we've got the added benefit of the judge, who seems to be, you know, in accordance with where they all stand.
Now, Rena, this whole idea with Obama of, you know, deciding that a law is unconstitutional, so he's picking and choosing which laws he's going to defend. Is this something that all presidents do, that all executives do at some level, or has Obama taken it to a new level?
I haven't studied it in depth, but I do study in this area. I'm not aware previously of, in the middle of a lawsuit, the executive branch changing the direction it's going on and suddenly now saying the law is unconstitutional and refusing to defend it in court. And in fact, filing a brief asking that the plaintiff's case be made easier for them, in essence, without getting into the details. So I'm not aware of that. I haven't seen that in the 10 years I've been involved in this constitutional litigation realm with Liberty Counsel. This is new to me.
It may have been a script on the West Wing, though.
Now, are you talking about Obama's federal case or the Illinois case?
Obama's federal case.
Right.
When I say case, it's like eight cases.
Yeah, and how can... I'm disappointed that John. I'm not speaking. We're nonpartisan here at Americans for Truth. But I'm wondering, where were the Republicans? I mean, they're stepping in to defend the law, but where is the rhetoric from people saying, "Look, this is a popular law. This was a bipartisan bill signed into law by Bill Clinton."
Regardless of what the law was, they should be standing on the side of the rule of law. And so it is disappointing to see the Republicans completely silent on this. It's almost like they're shell-shocked, like that proverbial dog who's been beat too much.
Yeah, and I guess I'll step in just briefly. And, you know, on the one hand, I'm very glad that they took the step of actually hiring outside counsel, because they could have chosen to do nothing. So I have to give them kudos for stepping up and saying, we will do something and take the hit publicly for the expense that's going to be. So the Republicans did do that. But I agree. I think there could be a lot more said out there, particularly in an election year, just standing up for the rule of law, regardless of which party is implicated here.
Well, you know, the left is far more aggressive than the right, John. That's what it is. And, Rena, we see it here in Illinois. I believe only one lawmaker spoke out against Lisa Madigan did, our attorney general, state attorney general, and siding with the gay activists rather than defending Illinois' marriage law. It's shameful. It's in the platform of the Republican Party. The left is sort of like a bully, and when they don't see resistance, they roll. And that's what's happening now with the homosexual agenda. With these incredible reckless lawsuits, we'll talk to you about, if not in this interview, the next. But Rena, on this case, I'm wondering about Sophia Hall. Is there a possibility that could somebody involved in the case? I'm not saying they will. It seems to me that the lawyers in Chicago are all worried about appearing before another one of these gay judges and getting the gay judges upset. But could somebody, what is the process for requesting recusal? How does that work?
I haven't looked at Illinois' specific rules, but generally there's a provision in there that you can make a motion to have a judge recused. Based on, you know, the interest of the judge, impartiality. There's a judicial canon that the judge has a duty to essentially recuse herself from anything that would look negatively on the impartiality of the judge. So there's a high standard. So a party, I don't know the process in Illinois, could move to have the judge recused, or the judge could do it on her own motion and recuse herself from the situation.
Right. Like, for example, Elena Kagan could have done in the Obamacare case, correct?
Correct.
But liberals worship power. Well, I mean, maybe that's a little overgeneralizing, but I mean, they just simply don't want to give up that power.
And Al Capone could turn himself in, but don't hold your breath. I mean, on either of those issues.
Yeah, you went real subtle on me there, John.
Yeah.
Al Capone analogy. But
And we've been talking about the things, statements she's made, the groups she's involved in. Regardless of how she thinks she can rule, I believe a judge in this circumstance should look at the overarching rule that I don't want to look like I'm biased. I need to step down.
Right. The appearance of bias, certainly given her record, given her advocacy, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. We're talking with Rena Lindewaldson. She is a professor at Liberty University School of Law, and she's also active with Liberty Counsel. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Professor Rena Lindewaldson of the Liberty University School of Law, and I'm looking at a photo in a newsletter of a gay activist group called the Lesbian and Gay Bar Association Chicago, or LAGBAC. And this is, I think this is a 2007 newsletter in which they have a photo of a reception that was honoring the I'll quote from it. LAGBAC hosted a reception to honor the lesbian and gay judges of Cook County. For all you out there in listenership land, Cook County is the corrupt county that surrounds Chicago, and it gave the world Barack Obama.
I don't want to distract what you're thinking, but it just occurred to me how outrageous it would seem if the headline you read is seek to honor the adulterous judges of Cook County.
Right. Well, that goes to John. That goes to you as a pastor, and all of us. We're believers, and we regard homosexuality as a serious sexual sin. And so, yeah, just even the language, gay judges. I mean, these are judges who are openly practicing immoral conduct. They're proud of it, even though they don't think like that, that's how many people regard homosexuality, and that's the problem. And Rena, you've always tried to have a biblical approach to the law. This is very tough territory. How can you get justice? We talked off the air. It would be bad enough, in my view, if it was a homosexual judge who at least was more secretive about it. But it seems to me the more open you are about the homosexuality, really, the more of an advocate you are.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're at a time now in our legal arena, particularly some of the decisions coming down by the Supreme Court. You know, the public view of the judiciary is not gaining in positive favor. And so as a judge, you have an obligation to ask yourself, you know, by my sitting on this case, and am I promoting the integrity of the judiciary? And, you know, I'm not saying she can't be involved in the groups that she's involved in, but it does impact what cases she should sit on and not sit on. And this is a case that no one's going to look at it and say she was an unbiased judge.
Right.
Even if she, you know, thinks that she is, the appearance of impropriety is so high here that a judge in the circumstance should step down.
Right. And to ascertain the bias, I mean, you have to almost deconstruct the language. The way liberals talk about homosexuality is the language that they use all moves people towards the idea that it's just a civil right, it's an identity, etc. But that is not the historic understanding of homosexual behavior. And there are many and many Americans, I would say the silent majority, who still regard homosexuality as at least aberrant behavior. They don't want it talked to children. They may have a moral opposition, a Christian opposition. But they certainly don't regard it as analogous to race or ethnicity.
Well, Peter, I mean, that's an easy one from the legal arena in that other than a decision from the Ninth Circuit or a couple of them, you know, the courts across the country, state and federal, have not found sexual orientation to be immutable like race and gender.
Now, is that changing?
It's a different standard. Well, plaintiffs continue to ask for it, and courts still haven't found it. They'll rule in their favor on some of the other questions that come up legally in those cases, but they're not finding immutability. They're pointing to, well, studies are unclear, it's uncertain, but courts other than the Ninth Circuit aren't finding this to be an immutable characteristic.
Right. Okay, now, Rena, go through, there's a wonderful paper I have in front of me by Paul Linton, who's an attorney, brilliant guy in Illinois. You can get that at the Thomas More Society website, and it'll be on Americans for Truth as well at AmericansForTruth.org. But let's go through this case a little bit. What are the homosexual activists claiming? One of them is they're saying that the existing marriage law violates the equal protection clause of the Illinois Constitution. Talk about that and why that's erroneous.
Well, you've got the Equal Protection Challenge, which is essentially saying that these same-sex couples are being treated differently than opposite-sex couples. Part of that is that they're saying it discriminates based on gender, that you are saying that I can't, as a woman, I can't marry a woman, but I can marry a male, and therefore it's sex discrimination. And this article correctly points out that, you know, other than probably one or two trial courts that I'm aware of, that has uniformly been rejected because men or women are being treated the same. As a male, you can only marry a woman, and as a woman, you can only marry a man. No one's being treated differently. And so this equal protection argument on the sex-based discrimination, it's not been accepted across the country. Now, I have to put in here, though, that when you, like Illinois, have passed a civil union law, you do have a hard time arguing that, you know, we want this distinction for the name only, that that's enough to say why same-sex couples should be treated differently than opposite-sex couples.
And that's exactly why they passed a law like that, right? They intentionally passed a law. And, John, this is just classic LGBT activism. They intentionally passed a civil unions law, which was almost identical to the marriage law, so they could make that precise claim. Right, Rena?
Yes, and that's where I see, you know, on that claim, equal protection, that's probably the hardest thing that's going to have to be overcome, similar to the California case, where once you've given them all the benefits of marriage, what's your argument that you can still treat them differently? And that's what this equal protection claim is also going to be focused on. And I think that's going to be the hard part to overcome in that case. So that's the equal protection challenge. Arguably, you're treating similarly situated people differently, and here are the differences, same-sex versus opposite-sex couples.
And that's why civil unions is not really a compromise. I mean, it's just a setup for the strongest claim that they're going to make.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've talked about this before. You know, you can't compromise on this. First, they ask for domestic partnerships, then they get civil unions, and then you're in court trying to argue, well, the name is so special, but I'll give them all the benefits and all the rights. And you have so little to stand on once you're at that point.
Yes, and then we've both talked about how agonizing it is to see pro-family, supposedly pro-family attorneys and leaders actually using that same language. And it gives me a pit in my stomach when I see a conservative or a conservative Christian who knows better, who's basically talking about, well, they have all these rights, and I know that's what they feel they have to say to win their case, but the more we talk about, sort of in a matter-of-fact way, that homosexual activists have won these rights, we almost give credence to those rights based on homosexuality, which don't deserve any credence.
Yeah, and you and I have spoken about this. What really bothers me about that is it suggests, as Christians, that I have the right to compromise on God's standard, and I don't. It's a sin, and to put any stamp of approval, like civil unions, on it is wrong for me as a Christian to advocate for.
Yeah. And John, the funny thing is, well, actually it's not funny at all, is those moral compromises end up leading to practical defeats.
Yeah.
You know, civil unions is probably floated in some people's... Well, I know. I've talked to Christian leaders at the highest levels who start to go for this civil unions. You know, they're tempted by the civil unions. You know, this is going to be the compromise that saves us. And that very compromise ends up leading to our destruction on these issues.
It reminds me of what you told me a rabbi once said to you, that the typical response of people of faith is to kvetch and then take two steps backwards.
Yeah, Rabbi Schiller, and I never got that speech, kvetch and retreat. Yeah, we complain, we whine, oh, we can't do that. Then we say, okay. I mean, which, Arena, just quickly on gays in the military. Remember how important that issue was? Well, how many people? I heard Michael Medved say it. Well, it's over. Move on. Well, if it's that important, and it was important, then it's not less important right after a loss. And yet our side just seems to be almost, you know, we're just so good at backing up, and the other side is so good at moving forward all the time.
What that tells me, though, is that you weren't serious about the serious implications that were result from a loss on that case.
Right.
Because if it's that important, you've got to keep fighting. And if you can say you can go on and move on, then you don't even believe, you weren't principled enough to believe it really meant something.
Exactly. Now, Rena, here's an interesting part of this case in Chicago. If they win, apparently it would only be valid in Cook County. And so we could conceivably have a gay marriage law in Cook County, and the rest of the state, except maybe a couple other counties that have gained intervention status, have intervened in the case, they would all have real marriage. How would that work?
And that was an issue, actually, in the California situation with Prop 8. And so I know Paul Linton wrote about that, and that was talked about in California, is if whether you should appeal to the United States Supreme Court, because arguably, you know, to the Ninth Circuit, arguably it was only one county.
So would that throw it right up to, I mean, is this case invariably headed to the Supreme Court?
Well, in this one, there's no federal cause of action, meaning it's only the state constitution. And so at this point, it's not heading to federal court. It's state law going to go up to your state Supreme Court.
Okay, dumb layman's question for you.
Yeah.
How important is the initial ruling that this judge with an obvious bias, a conflict of interest, she's an open lesbian, Sophia Hall, how important is her ruling if it's immediately going to be appealed up to the Supreme Court of Illinois?
It's important, and we can learn from California's lesson. The law, the court gets to look at again when it goes up on appeal, so it can look at the standards. But the factual findings that this judge makes and how hard the defendants fight, here the interveners fight, to get good factual findings, the appellate court can't change those. So in California, there were concessions made that shouldn't have been made, and so the factual record that went up on appeal, admitting that homosexuals make good parents, that they have a history of discrimination, that all of these sorts of things, the appellate court is stuck with those.
And you were kind of a lone voice in the wilderness there talking about that. Have other people come to agree with you that the Prop 8 case was not as argued as well as it could have been by our side, by the pro-family side?
There certainly has been more talk and people writing about the horrible factual findings that were made and understand that more could have been done. We certainly continue to maintain that. So that's what's going to be important here is the factual findings she makes, and it's up to her. Both sides can present evidence, and she finds what she wants to find. That's the judge's role. And so unless there's what they call abuse of discretion, meaning it's just so wrong, the appellate court won't touch those factual findings. And then they're bound to apply what she concluded on the facts to the law.
Okay.
So the trial court's important.
Wow. Now, another dumb layman's question. We only got 30 seconds here to the break. But how does what do you mean when the findings, you mean they've presented all the evidence and then she says these are the findings. So she writes the ruling and says, here's what the facts are.
Yep.
And after that, you can't contest it. That's bizarre.
And unless you can show it's clearly wrong. And so that's why those are very important.
Wow. Okay. We're learning and we're talking with Rena Lindevaldson. I'm here with John Kirkwood at the Grace Gospel Fellowship Church. I'm with Americans for Truth. Our website is americansfortruth.org. Go and make a donation. We need help all the time. We're always broke. Make a gift. Also, we've got our banquet coming up on October 27th, Saturday, October 27th. Dr. Judith Reisman at CLA Academy, October 27th. Welcome back, everybody. We're in our fourth and last segment with Professor Rena Lindevaldson, who's a friend, and time is flying, Rena, and I still feel like there's so much to explain. But again, let's just reiterate here. As you were saying, we have a sort of an unprecedented situation here. Never before in a major so-called gay marriage case in the United States have we had an open homosexual judge presiding. Is that correct?
That is correct to my understanding, and been following these cases for more than a decade.
Wow. Okay. Now let's, again, the judge's name is the Honorable Sophia Hall. She's a circuit judge in Cook County. She was honored by the Lesbian and Gay Bar Association Chicago. I have a picture here. It's on the Americans. It'll be on the Americans for Truth website of a reception where she was honored with 13 other openly homosexual judges. She has made pro-gay advocacy comments. The group Alliance of Illinois Judges marches in the Gay Pride Parade. They are pro-homosexual advocacy group. And so we're wondering, where is the impartiality that we would expect from a judge? I believe she should recuse herself. So does Rena. So do others. But so far, what's interesting, Rena, is nobody's touched it in the Chicago area. That's not just political correctness. That's also legal people being afraid of their future in Chicago doing law, right?
Well, I think you, whether it's specific practice of bar, I don't know that there'd be repercussions. And, I don't know that I don't practice there, so I'm not sure. But you are dealing with a situation with this case in particular that there seem to be a number of openly gay judges in Cook County. So even if this judge recused herself, it's going to go to another judge that possibly also has the same appearance of impropriety of presiding over the case.
But what is this term judge shopping that you hear where liberals, or I guess conservatives could do it too, where they take the case to the judge they expect the most favorable ruling from?
Yeah, it happens. I mean, you've got, and I can't say that, you know, it doesn't happen on both sides, because you want to get a judge that you think is going to be, at least from my perspective, I want a fair judge. I think some others might look for a judge that they just want the outcome that they're hoping for, regardless if it's the right result. But, you know, you can go anywhere, particularly that the plaintiff resides. And so in this case, as long as they had somebody from Cook County, they were able to sue in Cook County, and they knew they had a favorable circuit court clerk. And so you've got a favorable defendant, possibly favorable judge, and certainly they thought they took their chances, and it's like they did well in rolling the dice.
Okay. Now, before we get into the weeds of rational basis review, which is something I'm always a little bit trepidatious about.
You should know it by now, Peter.
Yes, I know. But for the people looking in, the people of Illinois, and I know so many who are just frustrated, they feel like they've lost control. What can they do in this situation? Obviously, they can talk to their legislator and say, this is why we need a marriage amendment. Please do something. But now the case is in the courts. What do you recommend?
A couple of things. While we were talking, I pulled something up on the internet. Illinois has retention of judges, so you vote for your judges. She was just voted for in 2010, so her term doesn't expire until 2016. But there's something called the Judicial Performance Commission of Cook County. And so I would certainly, you know, I think the public outcry needs to be there with regard to any legislator or any commission that has a role in retaining judges. They need to understand that this shouldn't be acceptable. And certainly the people of Illinois, if they're unhappy with this, should seek to pass a marriage amendment.
Yes, and of course that whole judges retention thing is such a joke. Who knows? Who researches judges, honestly?
It would be good to send out one of those cards like...
An informational card, but the reality is, I mean, I was in the parade and they come by with a sign, retain judges. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, how can you not get the feeling that the whole thing is rigged? You know,
well, one principle you could live by in Illinois: if you're in doubt when you're in the voter booth, given the condition our state is in, when in doubt, don't retain.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Okay, so now, Rena, explain here another judge in this case. Explain the process of how homosexual activists are trying to have homosexuality or sexual orientation, so-called, go under strict scrutiny review, which would be meaning it would be treated like race in the law. Talk about that and talk about how it normally is viewed as opposed to that.
Sure, and I'll try to take it down so everyone can understand, because it's certainly a mess in the law. But essentially, there's three standards that this could be reviewed under. There's something called strict scrutiny, which just means if the legislature passes a law and it's discriminating based on race, national origin, or alienage, it's subject to strict scrutiny, meaning the government has to have a compelling reason for passing that law, which is why most laws that discriminate based on race are going to get struck down, because there's no reason to discriminate based on race. If it's sex discrimination, gender, there's something called intermediate scrutiny. The government has to have a really important reason for the discrimination, and so gender has its own little category. Everything else in the law is subject to what we call rational basis review, meaning the legislature passes it, we're going to presume they had good reasons for doing it, and unless you can show it was irrational, no legitimate purpose whatsoever, the law is going to be upheld. And so traditionally, you had the three categories for suspect classification: race, national origin, and alienage, intermediate for gender, and everything else in the law was rational basis. And so what's
happening... Is that beginning to change now? Is the sexual orientation moving towards this?
It is beginning to change. And so in every one of these cases, the plaintiffs try to say, we should be suspect class. We should be, you know, we're just like race. We can't, you know, we're born this way. We can't change. We have a history of discrimination just like those based on race did, they would say. And so we deserve the same protection. And except for, as I mentioned before, some decisions in the Ninth Circuit, you know, the courts haven't done that. The courts have not found suspect classification. It's been rejected time and time again. In fact, 10 circuit courts have said no to that you don't get suspect classification. And so they've always been reviewed under rational basis. Now, I got to throw my two cents in there. Even under rational basis, the courts, they don't do it the same way when it comes to sexual orientation cases. There's just a lot of leniency. They say it's based on moral disapproval. And so you get decisions like Lawrence with the sodomy case, or Romer with the Colorado Amendment case, that just say, well, you know what, when it comes to sexual orientation, clearly you pass this because you hate homosexuals. And so,
in other words, moral disapproval is translated as hate and bigotry.
Yes. And so, therefore, you have no legitimate reason for passing this, and they're going to strike the law down. So when it comes to sexual orientation, we still are seeing these laws struck down, even on a rational basis, when normally that never happens. And so that's what happens on a rational basis. I got to throw in just 1 minute on this. The recent defense of marriage case that has been in the press in the First Circuit created a whole new test.
Is that sexual orientation? Is that Boston?
Yeah, that's the Boston. And we won't get into details, but that has, you know, the Solicitor General, the former Solicitor General Paul Clement, filed a brief with the Supreme Court pointing out the First Circuit created a brand new test just for sexual orientation. It wasn't intermediate. It wasn't suspect. It was rational basis plus. A little bit more. And so you've got courts just doing anything they can to cater to the homosexual movement.
Wow, a new test. So it's
a new test.
Anything it takes. Okay, now that begs the question then, Rena. We've got 5 minutes left.
Sure.
Four minutes left. What is the rational basis for our existing and historic marriage law that obviously limits man and woman?
Well, I'll tell you what my thoughts are on the rational basis. Courts, they either agree with this or don't. That's where it all comes down to whether you accept the argument. And from my perspective, the important rational basis is that, a marriage is the confines in which we would like to see children raised. Children need a mom and a dad, and the state has the right, and in fact, I think obligation, to promote heterosexual marriage as the best environment to raise children. And that, to me, I think that should satisfy strict scrutiny, not even just rational basis. But that's the number one reason why the state's involved in marriage at all. And that's what gets lost in these cases. I have to mention this real quickly, is the plaintiffs in these cases and challenging the marriage laws always make it look like, well, there's this bucket of rights out there, and you're depriving me of them.
Yes.
And it's not that. It's that the state has a reason for promoting a family structure that gives benefits back to society. And that has traditionally been the mom, dad, healthy family environment, economically, sociologically, educationally, psychologically, all of that. Kids do best in that environment. So the state wants to promote that. So it's not rights that everyone's entitled to and we're depriving same-sex couples. It's that the state has some benefits and they want to encourage people to enter into the relationship that offers benefits back to society.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is rational.
A healthy society does not grant rights based on a sexual perversion, and that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
And it's just amazing that we've come this far this fast. Rena, it seems to me that the homosexual lobby, and maybe we helped them in the pro-family movement by making gay marriage so-called the main issue, they sort of jumped right over the debate over the morality of homosexuality and just went for it all. And now look where we are. We're on the verge, because if you lose these battles, it's very difficult. Obviously, Rena, talk about the implications for school. How can you teach? You would have to teach gay sex and sex ed, right? Because some of those 12-year-olds might grow up to be in a gay marriage someday, right?
And that's been litigated in the First Circuit after Massachusetts legalized through the courts same-sex marriage. Plaintiffs challenged what was being taught in the schools, and the court said, I'm sorry, that's now the law here, and we have an obligation to teach them that this is a normal alternative to opposite-sex marriage.
So they were actually, for example, teaching how-tos of anal sex? What are we talking about here? We're talking about anything associated with homosexuality. They can't discriminate, in other words.
Yeah, and you've got California laws that say you can't discriminate whenever you mention marriage. You can't call it mom and a dad. You've got to call it mom and dad, 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 mom, mom. To just say mom and dad or even celebrate Mother's Day and Father's Day is discriminatory.
So when people say, how is it, we've only got 30 seconds left, but how does it affect me? That's one of the answers. It's going to affect how children are taught in school.
Yeah, which affects our next generation and the country we live in.
Yes. Rena, give 10 seconds more, 15 seconds, talk about, again, what can people do? We shouldn't give up on the culture war. We need our Christians to be active more than ever.
We have to understand that it's not just a morals battle, that we are fighting for truth, what is right, and what is good for our country, and you've got to believe that. So all of these battles have to be fought if we want to preserve the kind of country our founders intended we have and preserve our Republican form of government that we have and the liberties that we have today.
All right, Rena. Well, thanks so much for doing part one of this interview. We're going to read up on these cases and ask you more legal questions, which we're going to count on you to explicate very concisely and clearly for us all us non-lawyers out here. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
And maybe next week, Rena, we'll ask you about the Boy Scouts and Chick-fil-A. But take your local scout troop to your local Chick-fil-A and celebrate religious and freedom this weekend, folks.
Amen.
All right. Thanks, Rena. God bless.
Okay.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with Pete LaBarbera and John Kirkwood. All our interviews are available archived at americansfortruth.org. That's americansfortruth.org. Also, don't forget our banquet coming up Saturday, October 27th at Christian Liberty Academy in Arlington Heights, Illinois, featuring Dr. Judith Reisman. That's Saturday, October 27th. Please return to our website, make a donation, americansfortruth.org. There's a donate button. Donate to our cause. Help us to continue with these interviews. And thanks for listening. God bless.